It's the last panel of the day, and it's time to talk about micromobility. So we are going to have some fun. And the name of this panel is Micromobility, From Novelty to Necessity. And the first time that I realized how much of a necessity micromobility has become in cities, it was March 2020. At that time, I was overseeing Bike Share Toronto's second largest docked bike share system in North America, 8,000 bikes, 700 stations across the city of Toronto, and the pandemic hit. And the local government in Ontario started just shutting business down. You can't operate unless you were deemed an essential city service. And at that point, they had deemed Bike Share Toronto an essential city service, so we were mandated to keep running the operations, keep showing up to work, which I loved, by the way, and providing the service to the people of Toronto so they could get where they needed to go in this crisis. So, yes, micromobility should be considered a necessity going into the future, and that takes a lot of public and private partnerships, and we'll get into those details in this conversation. But first, we're going to invite up Manon, Regional Director for DOT in the south of France. She's going to give us a little 101 session on what's going on with DOT. Please welcome to the stage, Manon.
Thank you very much, Monica, and also thank you for accepting us as a micromobility operator today. So I'm going to tell you a little bit more about our operations. I'm going to keep it very short. It's a very short introduction about what we do, who we are, and also what makes us different as an operator in Europe. So first of all, we are here together because I think we all have the same mission here, right? So our mission statement at DOT is free our cities with clean rides for everyone. So this is super important, and this is what we are aiming to achieve, of course, every day. So reducing the cars, reducing public transport as well, if we can, because we can fit a lot of scooters in one bus. So that is super interesting. So when we talk about DOT, so we really see ourselves as a responsible operator in Europe, because actually when we started, we completely changed the business model of the micromobility. So it has been founded in 2018 by actually two French co-founders, and we started off super small. So our first cities to launch were Brussels, Paris, and Lyon. And actually, what you can see today is that in a couple of years, we have been growing to over 30 cities all over Europe, but all, of course, with the permission of the city hall to operate, because we do not just arrive from one day to the other. So today, we have over 40,000 e-scooters and 10,000 e-bikes all over Europe. So it's a huge operation. Also, just to clarify, we have our own software, so I think we are pretty much the only company here who is not using Vulog systems for our sharing. So what we have today is 800 internal employees. So when I started 3.5 years ago, I was at the first 50. So we have a ramp up that has been super, super quick. And also, this is very important for DOT, so we have our own employees. So we do not work with auto-entrepreneurs who are doing their own little business and get money by the tasks that they do. So this is really what differentiates us with other operators. So as you can see, we have many, many cities today. And actually, what is very important is that we're still quite considered small, but we have won the biggest tenders in Europe. So we have won London, we have won Paris, we have won Lyon. So those are really the top three cities in Europe today for micromobility. And this is what we have won together with big players. So we have Lime that has already $1.5 billion in the funding rounds. We have Tier that is competing with us, $600 million. Dollars in funding, and DOT, we are only at 200 million today, but still we managed to beat them. So in Lyon, we arrived seventh operator in an open market, and when there was a tender, we managed to finish first, just because we changed our entire way of working in the micromobility. So what differentiates us is, first of all, reliability of our service. So as I said, we are really trying to manage everything with internal employees. So this makes sure that we can manage really 24/7 our own operations. We know what's happening, and it's us who is leading basically everything on the streets. So super important. This also includes social responsibility. So actually, from day one, we are a real business. We are not just an app with scooters all over floating around. So this is super important. We also have a lot of social inclusion programs, handicapped people. So it's really important that we also show to the municipality that we are involved in what is happening in the city, and that we actually create a lot of employment as well. Then, of course, environmental responsibility. So a lot of critique has been given on micromobility. Is it really like sustainable? How long is the lifespan of a scooter? And actually, we can really show that there is a lifespan that is over 3 years. So as I said, that has been founded in 2018. And still, the scooters that we launched in the streets on that year are still operational today. So that is super important. We always try to rework our scooters, make them last as much as possible. And actually, what is interesting is that even though our fleet is aging, we are actually reducing our spare parts consumption by 10% by reusing the material, reworking the material. So that is really super important. And we were actually also the first operator to publish our sustainability report this year. So that's also a big point. And of course, transparency. So this has always been our key factor from day one. So make sure that you're transparent with the municipality, transparent with your users, and this is really the key. So I'm going to take you to one day of our operations in Lyon. So it's our best performing market today in micromobility for DOTS. So in terms of usage, it's quite massive. So we are talking about micromobility, but here we're talking about macro operations. So what do we have in Lyon? So we have 2,000 e-scooters on the streets. With this, we manage on average in high season, so here I'm talking about April to October, over 12,000 trips per day. So it's over 6 rides per vehicle. And what does this mean is 900 battery swaps every 24 hours. So it means that every day we manage to see almost half of our fleet. So quality control done by our drivers as well. And we have about 12 to 13 trips that can be done on one battery. So we do not need to take the scooter back to our warehouse, but we do it on the street. So we are super efficient. This is done either by electric vans or by cargo bikes. So we also try for ourselves to have as less emissions as possible on the street. Then, of course, we have the deployment, the pickup. Of course, we have some breakage rate as well. But as you can see, the breakage rate is actually not so much. So we have about 80 to 100 scooters that come back every day to the warehouse. So it's actually quite few if you compare to the 2,000 scooters on the street that are being used over 6 times a day that have already been on the street for over 2 to 3 years. In the end, it's not that much as you would expect. So this is from an operational side, and then, of course, we have it from a user perspective. So who is actually using our service? So today, I'm actually quite proud that even 2 years after the tender in Lyon, with two operators, we still managed to have 60% market share, and this is also by managing the quality of your fleet. So this is a real differentiator for us. So each month, we have 50,000 active users, so users that have taken at least one trip during this month. So it's a lot. And then in terms of new users, in a city like Lyon, where we are already established for 3 to 4 years, we still have 10 to 15% of new users every single month. But if you go to a city like Bordeaux, for example, in the month of August, 1 out of 2 riders was a tourist. So there is a real difference in which city you're going to target and the high season that you're going to have. So the average for the scooters in Lyon is 12 minutes per trip on average, which is quite normal in our industry. If you go to the e-bikes, it's a little bit higher. So it's more 14, 15 minutes for the bikes and a little bit lower for the scooters. And in terms of distance, so we are clearly above 2 kilometers, which is also important for us because we do not want to replace walking distance. This is a big critic from the municipalities. We do not want people to take a scooter 400 or 500 meters. They should still be able to walk. And then also from a pricing perspective, it's very interesting to see that we're really aiming to have the 50-50% in terms of users. So we have 55% pay-as-you-go, so people who use it occasionally. But then we also have 45% who are buying our passes and really come back every week, every day. So we have a very good group in the end who is using our service on a regular basis. So I think this was a super short introduction. I can tell you way more, and I'm pretty sure I will have loads of questions as well later on. But first, we're going to continue with the panel.
Yeah, we are. So we're going to invite Jamie from Evie and Francois from Troopy up to the stage as well, and we'll have some more conversation about what's going on in mobility. So welcome to the conversation. Francois, you want to start and give a little bit of background on the Troopy business model so everyone is aware?
Of course. How much time do I get? let's make it in 1 minute. Short and crisp, we are Troopy. We are based in Paris. We are born in 2017. We were partnering with the Japanese constructor Yamaha with thermic scooters, and in 2022 we are super happy to announce that we switched to electric with a larger fleet that we will deploy in Paris soon.
Beautiful.
I'm from Evie, which is in Jersey, the Channel Islands. If anyone's heard of that before.
Don't confuse it with New Jersey.
No, that's a common one. We've got a small fleet of cars and bikes on the Vlog platform. 180 Okai bikes and 25 cars and vans at the moment, all electric, hence the name.
Awesome, thanks for that background. So it's been said that people that use micromobility tend to skew to a younger demographic. And there was a study recently that came out of Switzerland that stated that micromobility users are traditionally male, affluent, and well-educated. Does this align with what's going on in your regions?
Kind of, yeah, we're heavily visitor-led, given that our visitor economy is enormous. Probably 38, I think, is the average age of a car user, and something like 32 for bikes. So when you take away visitors, that drops to kind of in the late 20s across both. So it's a bit of a mix, but we're quite unique, as I say.
And it is really interesting, the whole visitor play, because micromobility traditionally it's either seen as a commuter system where the assets are really used to get from point A to point B, and then there's another perspective of a system that's used for joyrides, so people to experience the city and not necessarily a commuter system. So that's a big difference between some of the micromobility systems that are out there and operating. Manon, what would you say about your target demo and users?
So on the first question on demographics, what we can see as well at DOT is that we have about 60% male and 40% female. So it is still a little bit more, but of course we want to make it accessible for all. And I think something that is super important as well is that women tend to feel a little bit less secure. So what really helps is a better infrastructure, also better vehicles. And what we also do a lot at DOT is making safety sessions. So we try to get users with us to try it, so at least they feel a little bit more comfortable. So I think, yeah, this is a big part.
And I totally agree with the women being more, less comfortable, I would say, on scooters. I took my first scooter ride last year at this time. Having worked in micromobility, I was always more comfortable on bikes and e-bikes. But once I took my first trip, it was like, you feel so stable on those things. It's unbelievable. So I think it's once you take that first trip, and you realize what it's like, you feel much more comfortable. So it's all about that first trip challenge. How do you get them on those things? Francois, what do you think?
So for Troopy, it's a bit special because we have two types of scooter, and that would relate to the first point. Two types of scooter, the smaller one, L1E, equivalent 50cc. It's basically what you see in every street of big cities in Europe. And that's a lot of joyrides. So it means you have probably more youngsters than older people like me. But on the 125cc L3E, which necessitate a permit, there you see people that are more used to drive a real moped, right? It's stable, it's heavier. You need to have confidence to drive that. But on the other hand, accidents are less. So that's also answer for the type of user we see. For the split, unfortunately, I would say still on a lot of males, too less women. And what are we trying to do, or what we're doing to improve that, is we are working with the best training session people in France to first put people on the moped and test it, you know, because that's the first step, right? Exactly as you mentioned. Once you are in there, you get more secure, you learn how to use it, and that's what we are doing, because it's about comfort and about security in the end.
So you're hosting those training sessions?
Not personally, but we are working with the best to do so.
That's so cool. What a great service to offer. Transitioning over to the importance of public and private partnerships, and you have a really interesting perspective about this, we were talking earlier, but I think we can all agree that the days of Lime and Bird rolling into a city and just dropping scooters with out being approved to do so, those days are really over. So if we could just touch on really briefly how you're working with the public bodies in your regions to kind of push micromobility forward, let's go there. Let's start with you.
So we're telling them what to do, basically, I think. It's basically a case of this is what's happening in London and further afield. As I say, fairly unique, but we're trying to get them to implement kind of shared mobility infrastructure and just support it in as big a way as possible. We told them we were going to launch bikes because there was nothing they could do to stop us. Gave them a date and then did it 2 weeks earlier just in case they tried to sweep the carpet. And that worked phenomenally well, and that's given us a lot of kind of advocacy at kind of authority or government level. Because we're self-governed as well, we can get laws in place that you wouldn't otherwise be easily able to do elsewhere, like quadricycles and silly kind of things like that, just to align with Europe. So we're on that path, really, of educating them at the moment.
That's really cool to be the guiding force in your region for micromobility, so you can really set the picture what's best for the public. Not an opportunity a lot of operators get. Francois, how are things in Paris?
So things in Paris. It's interesting because you come from the business way to the politic way in that paramount, right? So it's really interesting because there you see from a political perspective how they conceptualize the city, right? And we have to adapt at some point. And I would say adaptation here is necessity. So we went from the jungle to something really more organized. And what we do believe, and I do a bit of advertisement for Troopy, but we do believe that also the era of people who just produce scrappy product, it's over. You need to work alongside with OEM, improve security, improve comfort, respect the rules, put camera everywhere to just be sure that people respect the rules, don't do any accidents, because that's going to happen anyway. So that's probably how Paris moved fast forward, a bit too fast probably for us, but still we are trying to keep the pace and working with the best in that sense. That's how we move.
You're the best in everything, right? Yeah, and I think just to add on that, of course, it depends. Like, every city is like a different level of demanding, of course, for the operators. So what is super important is to set the right expectations and right KPIs in the beginning. So actually what we do, and sometimes really have to do, is sending a weekly report every Monday morning to the city hall and with all our KPIs in terms of operations. So they want to know the availability, the parking saturation, the trip length, trip duration, everything. But of course, it also keeps the operational team very focused. And then also on the user side, we also share a lot of information. And I think this is super valuable for the municipality. And when we talk about collaboration, it's also all the projects that you can do together. So one thing for us that is super important is intermodality, parking optimization. So we have so much data that the municipality can use in order to improve the infrastructure. So for example, when we were talking about parking locations, we do not only have our parking spots in the city, but we can also see when our user is trying to find a scooter, but he doesn't have a parking nearby. So those are things that we can then work with the municipality in order to improve. And I think this is super valuable because without us as operators, they wouldn't have this information, right?
Correct. And I do think, to your point on the municipality requiring a lot of data and wanting to know what's going on, I think that's the way they should be. Because you're right, it keeps the operator on their toes. In my experience, BikeShare Toronto had some of the most aggressive KPIs in North America in terms of rebalancing bike repair system uptime, etc. And they kept us on our toes, and they made us deliver a system that was exceptionally functioning. So I support cities being very stringent on their demands. But you did mention infrastructure as well. So let's go really quickly to the topic of infrastructure in your regions and whether it is micromobility friendly or not. Right now, a big discussion point in North America is developing better infrastructure so bikes and scooters can share the roads with vehicles. So we've got a lot of improvement to do. You know, there's dedicated bike and scooter lanes going in, no drive zones, pedestrian-free streets that allow micromobility. Are any of these things happening in your region? What's the infrastructure like? Thoughts there, Jamie?
We have a fair kind of fairly sized cycling infrastructure, path route map, but it's the segregated. We have more cars than people in Jersey. Famously, or infamously, and that's kind of our mission statement, is to kind of fit that first. And it's the segregated lanes that are the big issue, or the lack of, the kind of safety aspects that we touched on earlier. We really see that as being the main kind of, you know, catalyst for adoption of our services and just cycling in general. But that's yet to come. So I think that's the main missing thing, is the actual segregation, rather than just say, you know, carving out some residential parking and putting a green bit of tarmac down. It's a lot more than that, I think, to get people kind of really adopting cycling.
Yeah, safety and the dedicated lanes go hand in hand, right? So it's super key. Manon, what would you say?
Yes, of course you have the cycling lanes, but I think also for micromobility, it's the dedicated parking spots that are super important. So when they started to launch the first cities, there were no dedicated parking spots because actually the operators just came so quick that the municipalities didn't have time to prepare for it, and they did not have time to prepare the infrastructure for it. So of course it became booming at once. But what we really try to promote is for the cities to have dedicated parking spots from day one in order to have correct user behavior, but also to be able to accept the service by the inhabitants that might not use the service, because it can really be a pain in the ass if you have scooters everywhere. And of course, they are quite small, so if you can have them falling on the ground everywhere, it's quite annoying for the city. So we are really pushing for those parking spots. There are some cities where it's actually the municipality taking on this responsibility of saying, okay, I want this parking spot here, and it's going to be done within the next 12 months, which of course is not super quick, but this is how municipalities work, especially in France. But then there are also other cities, for example, Grenoble, where we launched recently, and it was actually up to us as an operator to give a proposal to the city hall on where to put parking spots. So this is actually a huge responsibility and something that we are not used to do before. But we actually learned quite a lot about infrastructure and user behavior in order to give a lot of new ideas as well to the municipality and influence the infrastructure in our cities.
Francois, what are your thoughts?
I think pretty much everything has been already said. There is just one thing I want to relate on is education, because it's also about collaboration with the cities. And education is key because they have a thesis in their head, right? They see what smart city is about, but ultimately you need to change, you need to move, you need to evolve. And if I give you just an example, part of our fleet is made with charging station, a really specific one that is super fast charging. But Paris, for instance, they don't know this. They tell us, okay, you managed to find us a place to put the charging station. But if we conceive the city of tomorrow, and I think charging points have been crucial today in the discussion, how do we move forward and how do we educate Paris City to say, okay, guys, 80% of all your parking lots are empty. So how do we do it, you know? So that's also about, yes, security, but also education.
So can you just clarify, are you choosing where these chargers are going on your own?
So let me clarify it then. So you have two options, basically. You go in the streets and then you need to have a kind of an agreement with Paris City, which is quite tricky to have. But other option is to go underground with a parking operator. In France, we have big ones like Indigo, for instance, or others. And you just basically make a contract with them. You rent them a spot. And here you install your charging station, which is super convenient, obviously, because they already have the electricity to do it. And they have the knowledge to manage basically a fleet that goes down and being charged there.
Wow, that would never fly in Toronto. It's such a regulated space. Everything needs city approvals. So it's really interesting.
But don't get me wrong. It also goes through an agreement with the city. But basically for the city, what goes underground on a kind of semi-private operation is fine for them.
Okay. Cool. I have one more question for everyone, and then we'll go to questions from the audience. So, having worked in both car sharing and micromobility operations, the challenges I faced in micromobility were nonstop, like a lot more than car sharing. So we can debate this over dinner. If anyone has a different perspective, I'm happy to debate. What would you say your biggest challenge to date has been in the operation, and what was the learning from that challenge?
Supply chain, probably in a word, in a phrase. Just looking at how we can, for want of a better phrase, vertically integrate more, not rely on suppliers as much, not going to buy and make our own bikes, obviously, but just supply chains, and just when you have a critical period of like a summer season with a, it's not a cyclical business whatsoever, so in Jersey, so you know, losing an entire kind of period of revenue due to a supply chain fault or issue or you know upset can destroy you unless you have a diverse enough business to survive. So that's definitely the biggest learning from a micro-mobility point of view, certainly. And then from the car sharing side, it's just charging infrastructure.
Okay. Manon, what's your challenge?
The biggest one.
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge in learning is the quick ramp up, I would say, because of course when we started like 3.5 years ago as the first cities that we launched, we had no idea on how to do the operation. So every driver had to take out their personal phone, install our app in order to do the task with the scooters, which was not viable at all. And at that time, we kind of launched with like 100, 200 steps, and it was super complicated, whereas now in like over the last summer we launched Metropolis of Grenoble, so we actually won 2 tenders, the scooters and the e-bikes, and it's the first time in France where there's only one single operator chosen and also one single operator the same for both. So it was a huge challenge, and we had 4,200 vehicles to deploy. So in the end, when you would have told me that like 3 years ago, I would have said, no way, we're never going to be able to do this. And actually by being able to organize your operation, so we got our warehouse on the 1st of June, started deploying the first vehicle on the 1st of July, had a ramp up schedule for 2 months, and now on the 1st of September, we managed to have 4,200 vehicles deployed, and most importantly, recruit all the staff in order to do that. Because it's very nice to have all those commitments that you're doing everything in-house, but it means that you need to recruit good people. So recruiting good people over the summer period, it's the worst idea ever. So this was a huge challenge, and still we are able to manage that, and we managed to keep our commitments to the city hall. So we managed to recruit over 50 people over the summer period in order to be able to launch the service with all the KPIs requested by the municipality by the 1st of September. So I think this is huge, and definitely 3 years ago I wouldn't be able to do that.
That deserves a huge kudos. 4,200 assets into the streets in a matter of months. Wow. And what was the total headcount? It was 50 people you had to bring on board to do that?
Yeah, we're at 50 today. Yeah.
That's awesome. You passed the challenge, you made it. Now on to your next one, right? Francois, what's your challenge?
Well, I think the last part, which is also super challenging for all of us, probably is the regulatory boundaries. And especially in free floating, I would say the company who don't start to evolve now will be there tomorrow, and that cannot be more true now. It means you have to anticipate a lot what's going to be asked tomorrow by the cities if you still want to partner with them. So probably that's also a high challenge for us, on top, of course, of the operations.
Cities are tough. Cities are very tough. Now we're opening up the questions to the floor. Anyone have any questions for these micro-mobility operators? Yes, Vincent.
We talked about public space and, for example, public infrastructure for parking. Sometimes you have to share the space with other operators. The city wasn't based on parking spots, for example. Do you have any best practice in terms of sharing space? I know some cities even thought about maximal number of vehicles put per parking spot. If tomorrow you thought you are allowed 5 vehicles in this spot, how do you manage that? And how do you collaborate with other operators to make sure it's not like the war for space? Especially because those spots could be not well designed, could be too small for the demand, depending on the area, and the city will probably not have the knowledge to design that properly. So how do you handle that as an operator?
All right. Indeed, big problem, especially when you have very high demand and every operator wants to get as many rides as possible. So we wish we had a lot of scooters there. So what we can do from a technical perspective is limiting the number of scooters that our employees put there, but also the number of scooters or bikes that a user can put there. So for example, if there are already 5 vehicles, we can say, okay, sorry, but this parking spot is not available. Go to the next one. Which is great, but not if there's not a lot of parking spots available, and also in terms of user experience, if you have 5 spots at the train station and all of them are saturated, you do not want to create this friction. And also in terms of other operators, it's super important to align, because of course you do not want to be the first one or the only one to do it. And this is hard, I think, when collaborating with other operators. You need to make the changes at the same time, because otherwise there's always going to be a user preference for the one or the other. So in terms of market share, it's super complicated when you make technical changes to your app.
Have you ever been in a situation where there has been friction between the operators?
Yes, so there's actually one currently. So you've been talking a lot about driver license verification, of course, for car sharing. We do not have that for a step or for a bike. However, we do need to verify the age of our users, because in France, the legal requirement to use a step is 12 years old. But unfortunately, there is no insurance company that wants to insure under 18 years old. So this is a huge challenge for us, because they are allowed on their personal step, not on our steps. So we need to control the age, but we also know that between 16 to 18, it is a lot of our current users. So about 10 to 15%, even though it's not super allowed, but we know it's the case. So we need to verify the IDs, but of course no operator wants to be first. So we all have our rollout and saying to the municipality, we're starting it. Okay, we start with new users. You're going to start every week with 10%. Everyone has their own strategy, but at least what we now have agreed on is a final date where all operators need to be at 100% of the user base.
So you're collaborating with all of the operators in your region on a regular basis then?
Yeah, we really need to. In terms of safety, that's the most important aspect for a municipality. So they want to talk to operators as an equal base as well.
Interesting, very interesting. Francois?
Well, I think, again, everything has been said. I would just add that it's quite complex, technically speaking, to do it, because we all use different interfaces, and at some point, collaboration is the key. On our side, we have some special meeting with our competitors to align on which type of policy, how do we use that to make it the less crappy possible.
Do you have any competition on Jersey Island?
No, I don't think anyone was silly enough, to be honest, as us, anyway. No, we don't have anyone, so as I say, we're leading the government to, if there was a competitor, we obviously know how to help them deal with it in terms of a permit base, but at the moment we're just on our own.
Solo. Any more questions?
So it all depends on the prize money, right? So if it's a big city where you really see a lot of value, a lot of perspective in terms of profitability, then you're going to put more on it. For example, it can also be that you go into a market that is non-regulated yet, but you know a tender is coming up. So in order to make the municipality happy, you're going to invest, whereas you do not have a contract yet. So it really depends, like on every city, where are they at with the regulations? What is the profitability perspective, and how much do we want to bet on this city in that timing?
Yes.
Just a question. So back in 2019, I experienced the scooters in Paris, right? Which seemed to be a free-for-all back then. Was it more the industry, you guys saying, okay, we're going to have parking spaces for our scooters now versus just letting them be dropped everywhere? Or was that more municipality or cities telling you this is what you need to do something that,
'cause
I'm assuming now you can't
just
drop a scooter anywhere?
Yeah, okay, so exactly how you depicted before. I mean, before it was a jungle and then rules came, especially for Paris, just to give you a hint of what's going to happen next year. The Paris City, around 87 square kilometers, they want 3 scooters every 100 meters. That's the way they want us to park. So that's the rule. Probably in some other city for kick scooters, they want some squares where you park, but of course, we just need to apply the rule, so.
So how would you enforce that then? So they pull up and see 3 scooters, so that, I mean, they could technically just drop it, but you would let them check out. You'd say, no, there are only 3 there, please move to the next available spot, or would you guide them then on the app?
I think that's a quite complex answer, so probably the shortest way to answer to you is, technically, it's quite feasible, so we will design zone where people can park, and if it's becoming a red zone, it means it's full. Of course, it's a lot of technicalities, but in the end, we are trying our best, because ultimately, what the city wants is order, basically. So that's what we are trying to provide them.
So essentially, the availability will show up in the app, so the users know where exactly they can drop those, but that's every 100 meters, that's 3, wow.
Just to add on that point, I think something that we haven't talked about is vandalism. Of course, you have vehicles that are quite big and you cannot take them in the back of your car, whereas a scooter, you can. So if you can leave it everywhere, of course, it's harder for us to operate because our drivers need to look for them and it makes it very time consuming. So actually, when we manage to implement strict parking, already for the users, they need to park on this spot. If not, they already get fined. So it's also an incentive for them to keep them on the spots and not to bring them to their garage in order to park them for the night, because of course we are a shared mobility. So it's also less hindering for the inhabitants, easier for us as operations perspective, and definitely our vandalism and loss rate has gone down since we have parking spots. So we really try to reinforce it as well.
Awesome. Yes.
One last question. For you guys who operate 2 different types of vehicles in your fleet, do you see like it's the same users that use both vehicles, or do you find like you have attracted other users because you have other vehicles?
For us, it's a little bit weird at the moment. It's round trip and one way for cars and bikes, respectively. So when we're just about to launch an ATB one way car service, and I expect a lot of the bike users to jump onto that, not least in the winter when the weather's rubbish. But at the moment, it's a very different audience, not least by age, but by use case as well, because of the round trip nature versus getting somewhere or going for a kind of 4-hour round the island cycle. So.
Yeah, I think would be the same for us, especially in terms of e-bikes. They tend to be a little bit older than scooters. So this is the main difference, I think, between both, and also that the trips are longer on the e-bikes. But then I don't think we have enough historical data about that, because we only launched the e-bikes 1 year ago. So it's still quite new as well for us.
And I think I can also relate on that, because since we have two types of scooter, one is used for commuting, the other one as tourism ride, and we see two totally different type of population riding that, so I can relate on the usage part.
Any other questions? I'm surprised there's not more. Micromobility is such a hot topic.
Also deserves a huge kudos, being able to transition to a fully electric fleet. How long did it take?
Sorry?
How long did the transition to fully electric take?
I would say in our aid, we are preparing ourselves since nearly 2 years.
Okay.
And I think it's a bit like Manon. I mean, you are in front of the swimming pool and you need to jump because you have no choice. It's a pressure of the municipality that say it's finished, And so you have to learn. It's not a new business to swap batteries and rather than to fill or go to the gas station. But it's new habits, it's new rules, it's a new technology, it's modification to the developed software. And as François told, we have the chance to work with a big OEM manufacturer in Japan, which give us a lot of capacity to make this investment. And we are also very proud that this scheme with the charging station, we are the only one that Yamaha offered us in Europe. And we have exclusivity until 25 to develop this scheme.
That's great. That exclusivity that's a good buffer time to get everything done. And then you mentioned going multimodal. When do you think that's going to happen? Very interesting stuff. Awesome. Thanks for that extra context. Anything else? Well, on that note, Jamie, appreciate you. Thank you for your time. Manon, thank you so much for the background on DOT and for participating. Francois, merci. It's been a pleasure. And it's a wrap.